welcome to Disc 5 of Confronting the Taskmasters of Your Life. For those who would like, we will share information on how you can obtain material produced for Shiloh Place Ministries following the message.
We are asked by Elam Fellowship of Churches out of New York, Lima, New York, in May, to come and teach on the revelation of Father's love and the orphan heart with their 800 or over ministers and leaders that come from many nations every May for their yearly conference. And as we were with the Bible school in September last year, and the kids were just crying and wailing and weeping for hours after midnight all over the floor, some of the leaders at the headquarters came over and said, "What is happening over here?" And of course, they ended up in weeping, wailing, gnashing of teeth too. And they said, "Our fellowship has to have this message, but there's no way they'd receive it. They're the oldest Pentecostal school in the nation, established back in the 1920s. And they just said, you know, we have some neo-Pentecostals, but we have traditional Pentecostals, and we just don't know. And they said, what we'll try to do is if we can get Bob Mumford, we'll bring Bob in, because we know Bob's had this revelation of the Agape Road and of the Father's heart. And so Bob was scheduling his 50th anniversary of ministry, and he said, "No, if I could come in and teach him on the Agape Road, I'll change all of that and postpone it, and I'll come." And so Bob came, and he had the day sessions, and I had the night sessions, and we had, again, many, many old-line Pentecostals that hadn't really had a fresh revelation of who God was, and some in a time warp, some moved more forward, and this was the cry of the Elam leadership, that we want to move forward into what God's doing. And so Bob taught the most powerful thing in the first session, to go after the people that still were living in what God was doing maybe decades ago, and he taught on the three absolutes of Pentecostalism: the absoluteness of the cross of Jesus Christ, the absoluteness of the Word of God, and the absoluteness among Pentecostals of their doctrine. And he showed them that the cross never changes, the Word never changes, but doctrine changes with each fresh new revelation of the nature of God. Whenever He does something new, it will change our doctrine. Has it happened at the crossing? Over the years that it's been established, how many times have you received a new, fresh revelation of God? And Elam bought into it, hook, line, and sinker. From those that were sitting there, 189-year-old, 90-year-old, been there since they were teenagers, says, "This is what the world needs." And we didn't get out till the first night, 12 o'clock, second, 12:30, the last night, 1:15, because so many traditionals on the floors crying, repenting to their children, repenting to their spouses, children crawling up in parents' arms. This is the Agape Reformation. It's beginning. And it's similar to, remember where we keep going back to. We keep going back to 1 Corinthians 10 that speaks about Israel in Egypt and coming out. But as they come out, they are still carrying much of Egypt in them. That we've learned there must be a separation from our lives from Egypt and a separation from Egypt from our lives. And we saw in 1 Corinthians 10:11, it speaks about, Paul says, that this writing on the people of God coming out of Egypt and what they battled with that created idolatry and immorality and doubts and fears in the people of God, this same journey of coming out that they went through will be the same journey you and I will face in the end days. And we learn that the book of Exodus is, to me, probably the greatest single end time book there is, because it's so practical. We can so apply this to our everyday life, because it was written. This was written for our admonition, for our instruction, for those of us who live in the end days. And so let's pick up today as we'll in chapter 3 as we began looking at God has given us a vision. He gives us a word. He's created us not just so we are saved and go to heaven. He's created us for His divine plans and purposes. First for His pleasure and relationship with Him. And then that intimacy produces fruitfulness. Intimacy always produces fruitfulness within people's lives. And we saw that how the people of God journeyed into Egypt and went through 300 years of blessing and prosperity. But then new rulers came into land, and we saw that the people of God were under harsh taskmasters. That these taskmasters, in Hebrew, lords of tribute or lords of service, enslaved them to treasure cities. And see, Egypt represents the world materialistic system that is all about a consumer mentality. And we talked about a caterpillar, that a caterpillar consumes 86,000 times its weight in 56 days. And it's delegated to just crawl on the earth upon its belly, but then it goes into a cocoon where meltdown takes place. And the church is in meltdown, families are in meltdown, individuals are being in meltdown, where something new is being birthed in our life, a cry in our life to fly above the cares and pains of this life, that they're still there. And see, Egypt represents that place of enslavement for the people of God, for Christians. Born again, maybe filled with the Spirit, people of integrity, maybe serving in church, but really no sense of purpose, no sense of destiny, because of the taskmasters, lords of tribute that have been signed to our life, keep us so busy building treasure cities for man, we don't have the energy left to love. We don't have the energy left to receive God's love and to give it away, to receive His love and to give it away. And the divine purposes of God are being hindered by Egypt and the taskmasters. And the world system today has become an end times Egypt that before we can enter into the inheritance, before there's a revival that becomes an answer for the fatherlessness of mankind, there must first be a going out. The church is going to have a going out. Individually, we're going to have to going out, then come into the divine purposes of our life. And so we come to the next session that we're doing together. That was a short review of 5, 6, 7 hours of teaching and a lot of crying. And the name of this session is The God Who Makes Things Happen. The God Who Makes Things Happen. And we left off last night with Moses at the burning bush. Because before the people of God can come out of their deliverance, there's always a deliverer being prepared on the backside of the desert somewhere. A deliverer that failed in his or her first attempt to set people free because he did it in his timing. He wasn't sent by pastoral authority. He wasn't sent by his family. They just did it when they wanted to and left dead Egyptians in the sand and leave a sense of failure, leave murder behind us, immorality behind us, moral failure, marital failure, and we think God could never use us again, and we find ourselves at Oreb, the place of desolation for 40 years thinking, nobody could ever use my life again. I failed so much. And in that place of desolation, God says, Moses, why don't you come over here? I got a little plan for your life. And you're just going to be so thrilled when you hear it. And God tells Moses, why don't you go back to your place of shame? Why don't you go back to your place of failure? Why don't you go back to where everybody's wanted to kill you, to where the people of God you even chose to identify with says, and you call yourself a Christian, and look at you. When everyone in life has rejected you, I want you to go to that place. And Moses says, I'd just be glad to. I can't wait. Let's go right now. Now, every excuse in mankind is found. God is ready to reveal Himself to Egypt. He's willing to tackle our enslavers. He's willing to separate us from bondage. God is ready, but do we want it? And is the deliverer willing to go? What slaves to this world system? What bruised and broken people is God preparing you for on the backside of the desert? He may be wanting to send you back to your very place of failure, your very place of brokenness. And today we're going to look at the personal revelation that Moses receives of God that causes him to be moved, start moving forward in his destiny. And in verse 13, after Moses listens to God, we see him ask God, "Tell me, what's your name? You're sending me back? Well, who are you? Who do I say you really are?" Because during the 300 years of prosperity, somehow Israel had forgotten, had lost the reality of who the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob had become. That during the years of prosperity, the need for God wasn't really there. And so God, we learned, changed the entire political system of that world to bring discomfort into the hearts of the people of God, so a cry would come out that we want to be free for covenant purposes in our life. Israel had become so entwined in the whole world system of Egypt that their philosophy and experience of God had become fuzzy and out of focus, so that they really didn't know who God was in their life anymore. And perhaps even Moses himself needed a new, fresh revelation of God. Who was God in his own life? Before there's a going out, there's going to be a fresh new revelation of God in your life. Who is He to you? Please understand the times they were in. It was just like today. There was a lot of shaking going on. The entire world system of Egypt and the Pharaoh of that land had one thing in mind: extermination of the people of God. These things are written for those of us that live in an end time as an example and instruction. And this entire world system of Egypt today and religious system that's multiplying across the world today and much of the political system, much of the media system have one thing in mind: extermination of Christianity on earth today. As it was 3,500 years ago, it is today. But Satan has one plan, extermination. God has another plan, emancipation. And which one are we going to contribute to? That's the telling question right now. And without a fresh revelation of the nature of God and who He is, how easy it is for our hopes and our dreams and the purposes of God in our life to be smothered and crushed by this world system today. And so we see another principles again in these few passages in the later parts of chapter 3. We see some principles that helped prepare God, helped prepare the deliverer and Moses. Some principles that from you, that again, I said it yesterday, what would really happen? What could happen in your city, in your state, if you really believe this? If it wasn't another nice sermon that a month from now, what did Jack say back then? Oh God, deliver me from ever preaching like that. But if we really grabbed a hold of this and begin to bend all powers and forces that be that's within us to focus our life and our energy force upon the divine principles of God for our life, what could it mean for a city, for a state, for a nation? What could it really mean? And one man caught that. But we're going to see how willing he was. And the first principle we see was Moses and Israel needed a new revelation and understanding of who God was. They needed an individual and a corporate revelation of God. God hadn't changed, but the people had. And during that 400 years in Egypt, something inside of them lost faith in a miraculous, power-working God. And now they're underneath the bondage and sigh, and they needed to know God in a totally new way. Oh, Lloyd John Ogilvie said in his book, The Bush is Still Burning. He talks about he's counseling them a person over and over and over and over again, and the person could make no headway. And finally, Lloyd asked him, what is the deepest need in your life? And immediately the man said, I need a new God. He said, my image of God is, I do all these things I'm told to do in church. I've tried everything I'm supposed to do. And he said, my image of God is, he's sitting up on top of the ladder. And I'm climbing up that ladder, and I'm climbing up that ladder. And right when I'm about to get to him, he climbs up 10 more rungs on the ladder. He says, I need a new God. My God is not a God of love and action. My God's not there for me. My God's not personable for me. My greatest need is to find this new God that you speak of. I've not found him. And this is what Moses is saying on the back side of the desert. Who are you? This is what the generation right now in the Matrix generation and the X generation is crying out. Who is this God? I don't see the reality of him in the Christians I know. So I'd rather chase after other gods because there's nothing real to this. We need a new God. And Moses wasn't willing to risk his life. He wasn't willing to go back to the place of shame. He wasn't willing to cross another wilderness and desert. Until he really knew who God was. Till it was personal for him. That it was beyond just a prayer of faith, I accept you, Jesus. That it was so real, it was so personal. And most people believe in God, but they continue in their same old struggles, same old defeats, same old problems over and over and over again. And our cry is still, who are you really? I don't really know who you are. We need a new God for our old problems. And John Ogilvie goes on and says, struggles are the stuff of life for most of us. What are yours? I have mine. Few of us continually feel good about ourselves. We have times of insecurity, self-doubt, times when we lack self-esteem. Anxiety is a stranger to none of us. Fears and frustrations track us down like angry dogs. We have periods of discouragement, disappointment, and depression. And every one of us have memories which haunt us and unfulfilled dreams that have hurt us. Who hasn't felt the loneliness that has nothing to do with the absence of people? We need love, yet persist in doing unlovable things. Broken relationships, misunderstandings with people, distracted, distorted communications trouble all of us. Worry knocks at the door of every heart. Not all our struggles are internal. We face difficult situations at work, society. Everyone has their shame. Their share of impossible people. Conflict is inevitable. We listen to the news. We read the daily paper. And our nerves are jangled at what is happening in the asphalt jungle around us. What could we do about these things even if we tried? There's a feeling of impotence that engulfs us, and we wring our hands in powerless frustration, all because we've settled for a diminutive God of our own making. We need a new God for our old struggles. The God who knows and cares and intervenes and acts, and who is present and powerful and makes things happen. We need a new God for our old struggles. And see, for most of us, there's not much new about what is going on in our struggles. They're continually replayed over and over and over again like a broken record. And Moses is crying out, "Who are you? I know you as El, the Mighty. I know you as Shaddai, the Provider. But what really is your name? I'm not risking going back to Egypt. I'm not risking trying to help another person be free. I'm not entering into the purpose and destiny of God for my life. I don't care if it was 40 years in Pharaoh's court and 40 years on the backside of the desert. I'm not budging from here until I know who you really are." That's your argument. We're crying out to really know who He is. And God says, "I am who I am. Tell the people of God, I am has sent you. Say unto the children of God, the Lord of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob has sent you. This is my name forever, and it's my memorial in every generation." And see, names were so important in the Old Testament. And what Moses is saying is, "I know what you do. I know your acts, but that's not going to take me back to the place of shame and failure. I really don't know who you are." And the fruit of our life today, the fruit of Christianity corporately, the fruit of individual families reveals we really don't know who He is. And He says, "I'm the God who makes things happen." We know His acts. But the cry of our heart is, before we're going to come back and confront the Pharaohs of our life, I need to know who you are. And there's so many people that have not come into that revelation, that experience. And the sad thing about so much of the charismatic renewal, Bob Mumford said, the charismatic renewal of the 60s, 70s, and 80s produced more backsliders than any other movement of God in history. The sad thing about what's happened in the river and renewal is that we have sought so hard for God to deliver us, to heal us, to prosper us. And when we demand that the circumstances in our life be changed, we often exclude the opportunity of knowing God in a dimension that we did not know Him before. We ask for Him to deliver us more than to be with us through the circumstance. And then we miss knowing Him. Could God not have just, and the people of God, been out of Egypt right there? Why? Why did the people suffer so? Why was there such an 80-year preparation of Moses? Why couldn't just thunder have come down and just all the Egyptian enslavers lay dead and the people of God plunder Egypt and go their way? They would have never known Him. And yet, the Spirit-filled movement of this past 40 and 50 years have cried out more for a deliverer than a personal relationship and intimacy. That's what this is all about. God, I've got to know you. Who are you? Because we deny the circumstance, we deny the experiential revelation of His nature breaking forth in our life. And God says, I am, and it means to be or to cause to happen. He is the God who will make things happen. He's the Lord of creation. He's the Lord of destiny. He's the Lord of circumstance. He's the Lord of victory and struggle. But I am the one who will make it happen for you. When you realize this is all about an experience of knowing Him and not a baby childish cry for, I value you for what you can do for me. No, I want to know you. And that's what Israel needed. That's what Moses needed. I am would be there for them. I am will make it happen. And the great question is, when is each of us ready to hear? To hear fresh revelation of God. The cross never changes. The Word of God never changes. But doctrine changes. Our revelation and understanding of who God is changes. Or something ends up drying up inside of us and living out of the past and no longer in the present of the God who will make things happen for you. And principle number two is understanding some truths about the revelation of God's name. And we'll give you A, B, and C in this. Understanding some basic truths about God revealing His name. And first, the truth of personhood, a personality. That God is saying here, He is a person. He's not just the force be with you. He's not just the power that He's a person. And how do you talk about God? Do you talk about Him as anointing, as power? Do you refer to the Holy Spirit as it, as the force, as present? Or is He a divine person that longs to take you into His arms, longs to father you, longs to fellowship with you, longs to be with you? You see, for 15 years as a Christian, to me, God was power and He was anointing. And He was there to equip me for the ministry. And yet it wasn't a personal thing. Because of the ungodly beliefs of my life and that my father was afar off and relationships were afar off. For me, God was afar off and it wasn't a personal thing. And this is what the battle, the struggle that Moses is going through. This is what we're going to go through. The same struggle then is your struggle today for those of us that live at the end of the age. It's not about His power. It's not about what God does. It's about who He is for you. And that's what happened in November 1995. And the whole story in my book out there is about he came after 15 years and He revealed, this is who I am. And I'd experienced His power. I'd been in the river for a year. I'd been many times on the floor and I'd been in the joy. But what it was all about this time was, it was all about Father holding a little boy. And I realized it's not just the force be with me anymore. It's about somebody that's greatest need was, I just need a daddy. Something personal. And Moses is saying, hey, I'm not going back there until this is a personal thing. Because there's no way I'm going alone with just a lightning bolt in hand. You could do that by yourself, God. I need a person to walk beside me. I need a father to comfort me. I need a father to strengthen me. And God will be the person you need Him to be as you cry out to know Him personally. He'll be a husband to the husbandless in Isaiah 54. He'll be a friend to the friendless. He'll be a mother to the motherless in Isaiah 66, 11, 12, and 13. He'll be a father to you. It's a personal experience. And the second aspect of this in B, some some revelation and understanding about His name. He is forever unchangeable. Hebrews 13:8, He's the same yesterday, today, and forever. And I love what Graham Cook said in the narration we did yesterday afternoon on that CD. You always know what God is like. He's the same yesterday, today, and forever. You always know what He's like. He's always good. He's always Father to you. He's always compassionate. He's always kind. He's always tender. He's always forgiving. Look at Exodus 34:6. It's there, even in the Old Testament, of His compassion, of His love. And He's always that. And you always know what He is like, but you never know what He's doing. Have you noticed that? How many times have you cried out on the backside of the desert, "What are you doing to me?" I just want You to know me for who I am, not what I do. And you parents of teenagers, how many times have you cried out when the kids leave the house and you run to the bedroom, "What are you doing to me?" Because we get so tired of them valuing us for what we can do for them instead of for relationship and intimacy. And this is what the name is all about. He wants to know you. He wants to personally interact with you. He doesn't want it all about His signs and His gifts and His power. He wants it all about a relationship. And see under this, "I am that I am." Scholars say that God was actually saying, "I will be who you need me to be. I will be the friend. I'll be the door if you need that. I'll be the shepherd if you need that. I'm the way. I'm the truth, the life. I'm the comforter. I am what you need now in your life. I am the healer for you. I am the deliverer for you. I am the Savior for you. It's not what I do. It's who I am in your life. It's a personal relationship with you that everything you have need of is in Him, in you. And I've said it over and over again. Everything you're going to be in eternity and in the purposes of God in you is already in you. The caterpillar crawling upon its belly, totally consumer-oriented, the butterfly was already in him. And maybe you can't see past the pain of the circumstances. The caterpillar couldn't see beyond anything once meltdown took place. But that butterfly was still in him. Freedom was in him. Freedom from 56 days of crawling upon the ground like a worm. Freedom from the incubation and meltdown was coming. It's in you. Freedom in the purposes and nature of God is there. And thirdly, in this passage, we need understanding of our own self-consciousness. And I'm speaking of this negatively, not positively. We need understanding of our own self-consciousness, the tremendous feelings of inability and inadequacy that we have are literally a paralysis to dream and vision. F.D. Meyer shares about the chapters 3, 4, 5, and 6 in Exodus. He says, Moses had 7 reasons why he should not take the job God gave him. Exodus 3:11, "Who am I that I should go?" And in other words, "I'm not fit, I'm not able, I can't do this." How many have never given that excuse? Second reason, Exodus 3:13, "What will I say? I don't have any words." I guarantee you, if you have an experience and a revelation of God, you will not lack for words. Why do you think I'm so troubled up here? I can't get it all out of me of what God's done, because it's been an experience and a relationship and a journey to where the God that I needed at that moment found me in my weakness, in my inadequacies. He finds me. He becomes my healer, a person. He becomes my confidant, my comforter, my father, my mother. He becomes what I am. He's the God that will make things happen. And when that happens in you, you'll not lack for words. But Moses says, I don't know what to say. How many have had that problem? Have not had that problem. Number three excuse of why you shouldn't move forward. Number three excuse of why to remain where you're at. Number three excuse of why to live in Num-Numville and not live for the divine purposes of God. Exodus 4:1. The people won't believe me. In other words, feeling like you have no authority, no voice in people's lives. I'm a nobody. We learned last night, God's looking for somebody that's willing to be a nobody so that He can make him a somebody again for the kingdom purposes of God. And many of us felt like a nobody my whole life. My whole life. I felt like God couldn't use me. That's why you need The Truth Will Set You Free by Mark. It displaces the ungodly belief, nobody could care about me, nobody loves me, nobody will listen to me. If you have a revelation of God and the look of the city of God will end up upon your countenance, upon your tone, and they will want to know a reason for what is different about your life. It's your purpose. It's your destiny. It's what you were created for. How will the world know that God sent you? By the love you have one for another. He's related revival down to us. He could snap his fingers, but he wants it to be personal. He wants it to be experiential, because he's created us for relationship, not the force be with us. And number four, Exodus 4:10, I'm not eloquent. I don't have the power of speech. What happened to that guy? He was general of armies. He didn't have any problem speaking then. But look at what failure does to you. Look at what murder does to you. Look at what self-condemnation and self-guilt and self-accusation. 40 years on the backside of the desert feeling I'm nothing, I'm nobody, I've failed my entire life. I've done the unforgivable sin. We lose all confidence. We don't feel we can talk right. And we say, this isn't for me. Fifth excuse that we all make. Exodus 4:13. Send the message by whomever you will. Why don't you do it through somebody else? A feeling of a lack of special ability, a feeling I can't change, I'll never change, nobody else, there's somebody else that's better than me. Others can do this better than I. And number six, Exodus 5:23. Neither hast thou delivered thy people at all, a lack of success the first attempt. And so we just give up and we just try. I've failed in the past and I'm not going that way. A fear of failure. What would life be like if you had no fear? What would your family be like if you had no fear? What would life be like if you had no excuses and you step forward? What would you look like 1 year from now if you gave up the fear and the excuses? What would your family look like? Number seven. Exodus 6, verse 12, children of Israel have not hearkened to me. They've not listened to me. A lack of acceptance. Nobody listens or cares about me. A lack of acceptance. And so we just say, they've not accepted me in the past, so I'm not moving forward in the present. But see, it's all because we haven't heard God for who He really is for our life. We have a diminished God in our life. And don't see Him in the fullness of the power He can be. James Dobson lists six psychological tools that Satan uses against believers. Guilt from past failures, fear and insecurity, fear of failure, fear of receiving love, fear of giving love. Third, anxiety and stress. Fourth, doubt and pessimism. Fifth, fatigue. Again, the taskmaster is so overwhelming our life, building treasure cities, we have no energy left for love or purpose. But he said the biggest of all is number six. He said the biggest enemy that Satan uses against us is self-doubt. Feelings of inadequacy. Feelings of inability. Who do you think God is looking for? He doesn't want to use your strengths. You get the glory. He wants to use your weaknesses. He does. He takes what is foolish. I said it last night. Flunked English class, flunked speech class, even in Bible school, could not stand up and speak. Couldn't stand out on a street corner and couldn't do anything without total fear, total failure my whole life. And yet, what's he choose? The foolish things. The people that could hardly get through high school, that flunked out of college because I could not pass English class to write books. The people that flunked speech class because I would not get up in college and just had to finally quit school because I would not stand before people in a class because I was so filled with fear. And so I just quit college because I cannot stand in front of a class. What excuse do you use? He takes the total areas of inadequacy in our life, and from that, he will use you to impact and change the lives of others. And see, the biggest holdback to entering into the purpose of God is the paralysis comes from the feelings of self-doubt and inadequacy. Every time I get up here, I have nothing to offer you. Now, how many feel like, Scott said it, this is one of the most powerful meetings ever. How many perhaps seen that of the times we've come? I don't have anything this week. I am more fried. I am more give out. I'm going through so much. Now, it's all good problems, or almost all good problems, that the ministry's exploding all around us, that we're having to transition our entire ministry, everything. I hardly have a free minute until I can get David to go to work for me. And interviewing all last week, and help's on the way. It's right on the verge, and one of these guys wants the job so bad, and my deliverer is coming. But I'm here with nothing to give. I'm on the plane, and I'm in such num-numville, I can't even go through my notes, I can't even see, I can't even read. I'm in such total inadequacy. I'm more fragile than I've ever been. I don't even feel like I have anything to offer people. But see, I've come to know, it's in our weaknesses. It's in our inadequacies. That all it's about is hearing God's voice. And I believe and I know everything He's designed me to be is in me. And when I think I can is when I can't. It's when I think I can't, He can. And He comes and He begins to flow through you because of a willingness. And I step off the plane after one of those days from hell of trying to go through airports and everything going wrong. And of course, Philadelphia Airport, 50 minutes at the luggage counter. And come in at midnight, and I'm wondering, what am I going to give these people? I don't even have any life right here to get through me. I had a 4-day turnaround from the last 8-day trip, which my wife says, you are never going to do that again. But see, it's not about me. Now, I don't want to live in that zone all the time. But when you find seasons in that zone, my wife said, by the time I got here the next day, this week is going to be awesome. You don't have a thing for them. What if we all caught that? And in the midst of that, I've learned that's what processing the Father's love is all about. It doesn't have to be a feeling thing. It's a thing of faith. I know who He is. He's the I Am has sent me here this week. He's the God that will make things happen if I will just move beyond my fear and inadequacies and fragileness and weariness from all the activity that's around me. because Shiloh Place has the look of the city of God on it, and people are being set free. It's got us so weary with trying to put an organization together that can touch the world. But God says, just show up. Moses, you may not have any idea what you're doing, but just tell them, I am has sent you. They don't believe in you. They'll curse you. They've thrown you away. Pharaoh's out to kill you. But if you just show up knowing that I am is here, He abides in you. He dwells in you. His seed is in you. And everything He has created you to be is inside and just itching to get out. And I'm just fool enough, I finally began to believe it when I had a revelation of God's love for me. I began to believe it. And people travel with me over some of our trips. They're so exhausted and spent and burnt out that they can't even hardly stand. Roger, when he first left his church, one of my mentors, and came alongside of us, I sent him to Australia for a month to four different cities each week. He lasted through 10 days in two cities. And he's at a place of total physical exhaustion and had to come back from that. He says, how do you do it? And then he listened to the tape series on processing the Father's love a month ago, and he says, I now know how you do it. It's not you. It's not you. It's surrendering to the I am within. It's surrendering to the God who I will be in and through you. And see, it first began to happen. I don't know how to love my wife. Nobody taught me how. I don't know how to love my children. You can't be a father if I'd never been a son. I was a slave in my father's house. But I am the Father's in me. And He'll be a husband through me. And I began to believe that in 1996, the end of 95. And then the word God gave me, healing and restoration will happen to your family, and then the nations begin to happen. And one, I don't know many people as wounded as I have been in life. One person as broken and shattered as almost any human being on earth began to believe, I am is here. And look what it's done in the nations. I am is there. I am is there. I am is here. And He'll be what He needs you to be in your family. It just begins by acknowledging the total self inadequacies within me and the inability to be anything but someone who hurts people. And see, God's preparing us. He's preparing us to touch these nations. And fourthly, understanding our personal ungodly beliefs and motivations. Understanding and being free of our personal ungodly beliefs and motivations. That's the truth will set you free. In Exodus 3, 4, 5, and 6, Moses keeps referring to they. And all the reasons why he can't bring they out of Egypt. In Acts 7, verse 35, Stephen before the Sanhedrin, and verse 24 and 25, we see that the very rejected one, Moses, became the instrument of deliverance. Do you understand that it just isn't Pharaoh who tries to break and grind and crush you? It's also they. That we're surrounded in our workplaces, husbands and wives, children, parents, we're surrounded by they. Those that don't believe in us, those that try to steal vision, our own brothers and sisters that try to crush us. But see, once you hear the voice of Father, say it's not about they. I was on staff in the 1980s, a very large church, 10 staff members, pastors at any given time coming through there. I can think of four four of us that were there during that season that are gone now. One's life, marriage lost, destroyed. Ministry gone. And it was all because of they. And he can put it on paper and he can write it out and he can pick out the people that created all these problems for his life to this day, 15 years later. And his life has no ministry. And the second, highly used in prayer counseling and deliverance ministry. And then one person disappointed and hurt him, and he resigned the ministry and he went to another church. Within 2 years, he resigned there. He ended up in divorce. His life's no ministry, total mayhem. 15 years later, nothing in his life. And as you sit down and talk to him, all that comes out of him is they. And they. And they. And they. And justifies destroying his marriage, his family, his ministry. And the third one? Same thing. Same thing. But then the fourth. I'm so tired of looking at they, God. I know there must be something deeper in you. I realize it's not about they. It's not about they. That they are the source of my biggest tests and trials. And I choose to forgive them, for they know not what they do. It's all they know. Hurt people, hurt people. It's all they know. And Father, forgive them. And I just want my identity in what you say about me, not what others have said about me. And see, when we get locked into replaying and rehearsing, rehashing what others have said over and over and over again, it begins a whole ungodly belief system that motivates us in life and ministry to try to perform in such a way that they finally see how anointed and gifted I am. And we lose it all. And we lose it all. 1,600 ministers a month resign the ministry. Of every 40 people who enter the ministry in their 20s, one retires a minister. The other 39 believed they. And see, there needs to be an awareness of these personal ungodly beliefs and what we're focusing our life and our energy and our thoughts upon. Because if we focus upon they, and that they might be in your own home structure. But as we begin to focus it on, I am is here. And I'll be with you through that fire. You might have to go right into the fire into work Monday. I'll be with you in that fire. I'll make you the representative of my love. It's going to take them a year or two to believe you. But they're going to see in the midst of the demeaning and the devaluing and the injustices they're going to see in that workplace, why are they not rattled? Why do they not criticize? Why do they not join in with all the judgment around the coffee break and have fried supervisor for lunch? Why is something in their life show the look of the city of God? And it's they that prepare you to be the deliverer. And when you're so tired of allowing your identity and being in the voice of what people say, you start crying out, God, show me your name. We need a new God for our old problems. All the struggles I've been through in life, they're still there. The they are still there. Oh, I have file folders full of those lives that have changed, but I have other file folders. Waste cans. St. Kay reads them. She sends a nice letter. We really thank you for your opinion concerning Jack, and we will certainly pray about it and consider it, and we really honor you that you have the integrity and the bravery to send this letter. And we honor they. And we bless they. Not too much, Lord, but bless they. And our identity's not there. It's in what God has said about us. And see, Moses was broken on the potter's wheel of they. And every one of us, has there been anyone here not broken on the potter's wheel of they? Anyone? It's common to all mankind. But why would three give up their marriages, give up their life, give up everything? And no longer influencing, no longer affecting people in a positive way. It was they. Yet one says, it was all there for me too. It's all there for all of us. They are there every day. But Moses says, I'm not going to fear them because I know your name. I now know you for who you are and not what you do. Understand that Moses is typical of you and I. And when God comes to us in our own personal wilderness and He says to us, it's time you move on into my plan for your life, the stumbling blocks will often be our own past, our inabilities, our failures that keep us from the belief that He is intimately involved in our future. But He is the God who will make things happen, and He will move us beyond our paralysis into His love, into His grace. We're going to skip the things that deal with the signs. They have some issues there, but that's not time to go through those and come to number five. It's so important this can't be left out because there is a limit to the dealings of God in our life. And we need to understand this. It's so important. We see in Exodus 4, as God is still dealing with Moses. Verse 10, Moses is making excuses, saying, I can't speak. I'm slow of speech. I'm slow of tongue. Send somebody else. God says, I'll be your mouth. I'll teach you what to say. No, Lord, please don't do that. Then the anger of the Lord burned against Moses. There's a time the dealings of God said, would you just get over it? And if you won't do it by yourself, I'll send your brother with you. And we'll let him speak. He can speak clearly. There are the times the excuse is, that's an end. A time when His patience is not there. He's a loving God. He loves us. He's for us. But He's tired of our groaning. He's tired of our complaining. He's tired of I can't. He's tired of us saying I'm too young or I'm too old. And so many of us are just like Moses. But when we refuse to occupy a position that the grace of God has assigned to us, because we don't feel worthy enough, we don't feel pure enough, he's a murderer himself. We're going to end up doing great harm to ourselves and to the kingdom of God. We need to understand that. Our excuses and abdicating and saying, send someone else, is going to cost people their lives. It's going to cost great pain. We all have a responsibility to be available to God and His direction in our life. And Moses lost something here at this point. He lost something that was going to affect the entire nation of Israel. He went from a single leader to having to share the leadership and reward with his brother Aaron. And I find it very interesting that later, when the people of God are brought out of Egypt and they come to the mountain of God where Moses goes up on to the mountain to do business with God and to receive the Ten Commandments, because Moses had advocated leadership of the people and he shared it with another individual. What happened when Moses went up on the mountain? It was his brother that built the golden calf. Moses had the personal experience in the nature of God that caused him not to be influenced by they. Aaron hadn't. And when Moses, in that personal face-to-face encounter with a burning bush, advocates and part of his responsibility and turns it over to someone else that hasn't had that experience of grace, that hasn't had that breakthrough in his own life, When the time of trial comes and they start whining and complaining and overwhelming you, they respond to the voice of man and not to the voice of God. And many of Israel died, and others corrupted, and division and strife was released within the people. Oh God, when that revelation came to me, back when this material was working in my life in the 1980s, I cannot quit. I cannot say no. I cannot resign. I cannot abdicate the responsibility of the purpose and call of God upon my life, because it will cost the nations. It will cost the family, because it can become an open door for the enemy, because some people just have not had the experience and revelation of the nature of God that I have. And if I turn the responsibility over to those that have not had it, then they will influence them more than the voice of God. And this is all part of our journey. It's a process. And see, there's an unhealthy fear of God, thinking He's constantly condemning you and judging you and throwing you away. That's the ugly voice. Have you noticed how close the ugly voice and the good voice sound just alike? Because the ugly voice uses the word, the accuser of the brethren, as an iron Bible to beat you over the head. But the good voice uses the voice of the comforter, the encourager. And this is part of this journey coming out. That God, I want to operate out from under the very good voice. I want to move forward in the good voice. But there's a day His patience says, it's going to cost people, but I'm willing to share it. If you reject it, it's going to cost. And in the next session together, you'll see it can even cost you your life.
If you would like to order this product or any other material available at Shiloh Place Ministries, you may reach us at 843-365-8990. Or write to us at Shiloh Place Ministries, P.O. Box 5, Conway, South Carolina, 29528. Either way, we'd love to hear from you. For our friends comfortable with the computer, visit our website at www.shilohplace.org. Or you may email us at info@shilohplace.org.